Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. Constitution Day was over a month ago, but with midterm elections coming up soon, we are broadcasting Manchester University's Constitution Day panel. This is the second consecutive week we are bringing you a presentation from Manchester's Values, Ideas, and the Arts series. Last week we heard from Carissa Fralin, an alumnus of MU, and the next voice you will hear for this week's show is the moderator of the panel, Professor Leonard Williams. Thank you for listening.
My name is Leonard Williams. I teach political science and serve as Dean of the College of Education and Social Sciences, and I want to welcome you to our annual Constitution Day VIA event. Constitution Day commemorates the signing of the Constitution by the delegates in the Philadelphia Convention in 1787. So that was before they sent it out to the states to be ratified. The federal government mandates that institutions like ours that receive federal funds have a Constitution Day event. I'll let the panelists introduce themselves, but the basic idea here is that I'll have a set of questions to ask. Each person on the panel will give an answer, and hopefully that will spark some dialogue among us. Once again, thanks for coming out for this. It's an event that I look forward to every year. And always find it one from which I learn a great deal. So the first question I had for our panelists, and they'll introduce themselves, is what does the Constitution mean to you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Michael Staudenmeyer. I'm brand new at Manchester as an assistant professor of history. I teach U.S. history and hopefully eventually also teach some Latin American history. My research and teaching interests are really focused on the 20th century, not so much the time frame when the Constitution is framed, but we still live under the Constitution. And I have a particular interest in questions of race and ethnicity and what we would call grassroots social movements, movements for social change, and particularly U.S. Latino or Latinx communities. So with all of that, I'm going to give kind of a historical perspective on some of this. I don't have the most positive rah-rah things to say about the Constitution, let's put it that way. I teach, every history class I teach, I tell my students that history is not just a timeline with a collection of facts. History is an argument about the past. If I were to express very briefly what the Constitution means to me, I think that the Constitution is a very old and very rigid document that does not reflect the parts of contemporary American society that I think are most vibrant and most important. And I think that that was not an accident and not a mistake. I think it was an intentional design. The Constitution was framed, I would argue, to basically defend forms of privilege, especially around questions of race and class, so that wealthy white men in particular framed the Constitution to protect their interests. And for me, that's not a good look, right, in the 21st century. But that's really what the Constitution means to me. So luck of the draw, I went first. I have no idea what my colleagues will say here. You'll get different perspectives from them. So that's it.
Hello, I'm Jay. My pronouns are she and they. And I'm the director of CARE Initiative. Although, you know, my office deals with domestic violence, sexual violence, and stalking here on this campus. My educational background is I used to be a social studies teacher. Also have a master's in higher education. I'm also working on my doctorate in human sexuality. And that has a lot to do, all of those areas have a lot to do with the Constitution and what I feel about it. I had some time to think about this question. And as someone that identifies as Black, queer, and a woman, what that actually means to me to talk about the Constitution, it means that I straddle between two fences of one, a pride, aware of my privileges and actually being able to actually go get an education and being able to flourish as much as possible within the educational confine. But also on the other end, really realizing that the Constitution was developed to subjugate people that look like me, my family members, that people that are Latinx, that are LGBTQ+, that are women as well. And the document continues to be a source of the subjugation of certain populations as well. So, you know, it's a straddle between two fences. How can you have both pride and simultaneously fear of a document and the fact that it's a living document as well, that it can ebb and flow as years progress? So I hope to bring that out a little about cultural studies and necropolitics that you all may have learned a little bit about as well. So I'm interested in the questions too.
Thanks. My name is Seth Mayer. I'm assistant professor of philosophy here at Manchester. This is my third year. Like I said, I study philosophy. My interests are mainly in ethics and political philosophy. I teach the law and philosophy class here. So I like to look at issues related to law from a philosophical, theoretical perspective, trying to think about what some of the concepts and ideas mean in that context. As far as what the Constitution means to me, I think I'm probably going to end up in this sort of space that Jay is inhabiting about, like, on the one hand and on the other hand about it. I'll say some positive things in response to this first question and some sort of more conceptual things in response to this first question, and then I'll bring up some worries I have later on. I think a constitution in general, not just the U.S. Constitution, but any constitution, is really a framework for disagreement. It creates a sort of common language and a common set of values that you can appeal to when you disagree with someone else, and it sets rules for how disagreement's going to go and how you can create laws and other sorts of things that, you know, you can use to manage cases where someone feels one way versus feeling another way. I think that the particular constitution we have comes out of a particular historical moment when there were a group of people, as Mike was pointing out, white, male, wealthy people, many of whom were pretty young, I believe, who were coming out of the experience of the Revolutionary War and the failure of the Articles of Confederation, and they were trying to take lessons about equality, justice, property, rights, freedom, corruption, independence, and try to think about how to create a framework that would reflect what they'd learned about those values from their experiences. Okay, so that's what I'll say for now, sort of more positively about the Constitution.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Tommy Smith. I am the Dean of Pharmacy Programs at our Fort Wayne campus. In addition to being a pharmacist, I'm also an attorney. And like others on the panel here, I have a love-hate relationship with the Constitution. And I really struggled in thinking about this question about what does the Constitution mean to me as an individual. And after a lot of contemplation and thought, I came to a realization that the Constitution afforded me the opportunity in 2013 to marry my partner of 18 years. I was married in New York 2 days after the Defense of Marriage Act was overturned. In 2013, in a Supreme Court case, the United States versus Windsor, the Supreme Court struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, which is also referred to as DOMA, the portion of the act that defined marriage between a man and a woman for federal purposes. The court ruled that DOMA was unconstitutional as it denied same-sex couples federal benefits and federal protections. Now, even though I was married in 2013, my marriage wasn't recognized in the state I was living in at the time. I was living in Florida. And it wasn't until 2015 in a case, Obergefell v. Hodges, where the Supreme Court granted same-sex couples to be married in all 50 states. Now, in the Windsor case, it's a little confusing as to why it is the Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional. And ultimately, it came down to a couple of things. First, the principle of federalism. And federalism is a type of government where power is shared between the federal government and another unit of government. And in our case, it's the states. And the argument there was that marriage is something, an issue that really ought to be left to the states. And the argument was that this was, the federal government was intruding in an area that should have been left to the states. And so that was sort of the federal, the federalism concept behind that. But also, the argument was made about liberty, and particularly the Fifth Amendment Due Process Clause that indicates that the federal government cannot deprive an individual of life, liberty, or property. And the opportunity to marry, the right to marry, is a liberty that has been recognized in the Constitution. And the argument was that same-sex couples were denied liberty under the Fifth Amendment Due Process Clause. The Constitution certainly does mean something to me because it transformed my life.
Those are very interesting responses. And so what I want to do, I think, is explore them a little bit further, see if we can draw out some of the ideas that you expressed in a very short space. One thing that's important to me, I think, in what you all said, was that for you, the Constitution is very much a living document. It's like, it's here now before us. And that's one of the messages I wanted us to work with, was to say that this is not just some dusty old piece of paper parchment in the archives, but rather something that matters to us here and now. So in order to get at that, though, let's explore, Tommy, what you said with the about having a love-hate relationship with the Constitution. What parts of it kind of inspire that love, perhaps? What parts of it repel you that you think really need some work?
Well, I think some really great things have come out of the Constitution. You know, for instance, the 13th Amendment, the abolishment of slavery, for example, the 19th Amendment, where the right to vote was granted to women. I mean, these are powerful, transformative, life-changing things. And because of that, a lot of good has come. But there also has been, in my opinion, you know, certainly some barriers. One of the things that I think is very interesting, and I identified in one of our questions for our homework, was thinking about some of the flaws of the Constitution. And we are afforded rights in the Constitution, some that are enumerated, meaning that they are written in the Constitution, like the First Amendment freedom of speech. But we're also afforded a number of rights in the Constitution that are unenumerated, things that are not written there. The right to privacy, the right to contraception, for example. And these rights, many of them are fragile. And we are afforded these rights due to Supreme Court interpretation of the Constitution. And so depending on the makeup of the court at any given time, rights can be expanded and rights can be contracted. And so it really makes me think, in preparation for our talk tonight, about the fragility of some of those rights. And so I guess that kind of is the hate side of the fence, if you will, for me.
So one of the things that concerns me a lot about what the Constitution doesn't necessarily encourage is it's very concerned with restricting government power, which is a good idea, it seems like, to make sure that the government isn't taking away citizens' freedoms. I think it's not concerned enough about private actors taking away people's liberties. For example, if you work in most contexts, you have, you know, rights, but there are pretty serious restrictions on your rights in the workplace. And the power that a corporation or a private entity can have in public life is pretty expansive, according to the current sort of interpretation of the Constitution. One of the examples people talk a lot about is the Citizens United decision and the role of money in politics. So the way the Constitution has been interpreted allows for pretty extensive political power on the part of business, so to control how laws are created or to influence how laws are created. And it also allows businesses a lot of control over their workers. You know, you can be required to do a lot of things depending on what your job is. And I'm concerned about the way that the Constitution isn't explicit about trying to protect people's rights in the face of private sorts of power, non-governmental power. And maybe that's something that could be found in the Constitution under a different sort of jurisprudence, like if different courts were interpreting it. But at the moment, that seems to be the direction it's gone, and that's a concern I have about it.
I think my concern about the Constitution is that it's purely based on a congenital theory about life, that you're born into America and you're afforded these rights, but based on these congenital theories, you're really assuming whose life really matters most in the context of interpreting the Constitution. So we have a lot of debate about, let's say, for example, Colin Kaepernick protesting during the American flag. But we know that the part of the enumerable rights that we have for the Constitution is the right to petition and the right to peacefully assemble. If one feels that the government is violating their rights in their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and if someone is protesting against police brutality against a group, this still is something that we are battling with when it comes to how we're interpreting the Constitution. Whose life really matters, whose voice really is on the table when it comes to how we're interpreting it, especially when it comes to these things. When we think of congenital privilege, so birthing privilege, not everyone is birthed into privilege, but the Constitution is saying that, okay, since we are Americans, that we are afforded all of these rights, but still there are groups of people saying whose life really matters in the context of these amendments, especially when we're thinking of the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So I think that's really my concern with it, is that especially the unenumerable rights of the Constitution, based on the, you know, the identity of the courts, those can change based on others' views on whose life really matters and whose views really matters or whose voice really matters that's on the table. Because some people feel that police brutality is not an issue. Some people feel that reproductive rights are not an issue. And if you don't feel that's an issue and you're in a position of power, especially on the courts, and to make changes, then those are going to directly impact the individuals that you're serving. So I think that's really one of my concerns with the Constitution, and it directly impacts people like me, especially when the courts aren't necessarily made up to look like me or to have the lived experiences that I have as a Black queer woman. How can you make decisions based on some interpretation of how others feel or how others may view a certain population, but not necessarily know? And I think that's probably one of my concerns.
I think I don't have a love-hate relationship with the Constitution, and I just don't find much to love. Is it better than a pure police state? Yes, it is. So I don't think that's love. I have a profound commitment to democracy. I think that popular rule is the essence of any society that claims to be free. And the Constitution is structurally designed to be a drag on democracy. And we can see this in all sorts of places. The Electoral College exists today and has decided two of the last four elections, five elections, in a way that is obviously the opposite of whatever we think the value is of the popular vote. It clearly should be more determinative than an electoral college that was designed 200 plus years ago. In democratic terms, it seems very strange that 50 people who are elected on a non-proportional basis, right? The Senate is not elected based on the percentage of the population that lives in each state. It's based on there are 50 states, so there are 100 senators. That in and of itself is profoundly undemocratic. The existence of the Senate is undemocratic. And the fact that Supreme Court appointments per the Constitution
Our life appointments is profoundly undemocratic. One of the questions Leonard asked us to contemplate is if we could advocate a single reform. I think the single reform I would advocate is that Supreme Court terms are 10 years and not renewable. I think that would be an improvement in the democratic structure of our society. It would be a small one, but it would be an improvement. And the problem is that the Constitution, at its core, was designed to be a drag on democratic impulses that surged during the Revolutionary War and immediately afterwards, and needed to be sort of put back in the box. That's my read as a historian, and I think it affects us deeply on a daily basis today.
WBOI Presents will return after a short break. Stay tuned.